Good evening. If you can't hear me, I'm so very excited to be here this evening. I must thank the eldership and Ray and Brother Billy for allowing me to stand in his stead. I am very excited about this series that we have this semester. I'm very excited about the Encounter series. Just last week, we had Wrestling with God. The week before that, we had Walking with God. Two phenomenal lessons. And to be completely honest, I was more excited about another topic, the whisper of God from his encounter with Elijah. This. Did I have the wrong thing? I don't know if that's on.
Oh, well, we'll work right here. Is it now? No, it's just, okay. My apologies. I do not know how to work this. I must express, though, that I am very excited about Whisper with God, and I was hoping to have that topic. Ray had something else in mind for me. I think he meant to challenge me, because as I began to think about do as I have done, I began to reflect and to fall short. I couldn't reflect over any instance in my life in which I have reflected fully a Christ-like action or word. Please do not misunderstand. I consider myself a decent person. I have said nice things to people. I have done good things. And yet, each time I considered these, I couldn't think of an instance in which I had done them purely selflessly. If I had ever said something to someone, I meant to receive something in return. If I had ever done something for someone, I meant for it to be seen. And so as I read John 13, I begin to realize that I have not been fully Christ-like. Please turn over to the passage, to John 13. Chad did a wonderful job of reading it for us this evening. But I'd like to begin in verse 1. Now before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, that he would depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During the supper, the devil, having already put in the heart of Judas Iscariot to betray Jesus, him knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come forth from God and was returning to God, got up from the supper and laid aside his garments, taking a towel. He girded himself. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet. And then he came to Simon Peter, and he said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" And Jesus says, "You don't realize what I'm doing, but you will soon." Peter replies and says, "You shall never wash my feet." And Jesus says to him, "If I do not wash you, you will have no part with me." Peter then says, "Lord, then wash not only my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus said, "He who is bathed needs only his feet washed, for he is completely clean. You are clean, but not all of you." For this he knew that one was to betray him that night. So when he had washed their feet and taken their garments and reclined again at the table, he said to them, "Do you not know what I have done? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If then the Lord and teacher washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done." Tonight I'd like to look at two different disciples. Two of his disciples in which he washed their feet. The first of which is Peter. It is very evident throughout the Gospels that Peter is probably the most outspoken, the most brash disciple that Jesus has. And I find myself in a very similar situation sometimes. He doesn't act. He doesn't think before he acts. He doesn't consider. He has zeal without wisdom. And so it is Jesus that washes Peter's feet, knowing that in a few hours he will betray him. Knowing that within a few hours he will deny him three times. In fact, Peter goes on to denying him, saying that he will risk his life for Christ. And yet from this example, we can see that Jesus loved Peter. Peter was with Jesus on the Transfiguration of the Mount. He was with Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, guarding him while he prayed. It is evident that Jesus loved him to the end, in spite of what Peter will do. It is from this example that we as brothers and sisters must love each other in spite of the wrong that we will do to each other. It is kind of implied that we will sin against each other, that we will say things to each other that we don't come to mean later on. And it's a sad situation, but we must love our friends regardless of their trespasses against us. If you turn over to Philippians chapter 2, we see Paul describing a situation at the church of Philippi, and he desires unity. He desires peace. He says in verse 1, "Therefore, if there is any encouragement in Christ, if there is any consolation of love, if there is any fellowship of the Spirit, any affection and compassion, make my joy complete by being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose." Last week, we had the Free Hardeman Lectureships, and one of my favorite events is Open Forum. And Brother Ralph Gilmore received several questions, but one was about gossip. It was about social media and if the church of the first century dealt with such similar situations. And Ralph, with his quick wit, said that the first century church didn't have Twitter, so it wouldn't have been such a problem. And yet in that moment, I began to realize that the week before, I had engaged in such gossip. It really wasn't gossip as much as just outright maliciousness. We were sitting in chapel, and something had come up, and I thought it was dumb. I thought it was stupid, and so I said something. What I am more ashamed of, though, is that I meant for it to do harm. I intended to be rude. I intended to be snarky. I intended for the person who it was directed towards to see it and think about it. But I did it indirectly. I didn't call them out by name. I had engaged in pain that was needless. I had engaged in pain that was worthless. For what? It didn't help anyone. It didn't make any situation better. It merely was hateful. And too often in the church, we are the source of pain. We are the source of each other's hurt. And as brothers and sisters in Christ, we need to love each other as Christ loved his disciples. Later on in that passage in John 13, in verse 35, he says that the world will know that you are my disciple by your love. By your love for one another. There was another question that came up several times. In fact, it was a recurring theme at Open Forum. Whether millennials are leaving the church because... And everyone seemed to have a different answer. Why is my generation, why are college students and people that graduate from college leaving the church? And I have to wonder if it's because we read of things, we read of a better situation, a better church than we actually are. If what we're promised is not what is fulfilled. if people are leaving because we are not acting as we should. A few weeks ago, I read on Huffington Post an article, and at first I was furious. I was livid because it was a worldly investigation, a worldly inspection of Christianity. And I thought, they have no right to call us out like that. And yet I read it a few more times and was shocked because it was profoundly accurate. And so I ask that you keep an open mind as I read this. Once upon a time, a mother made her son a wristband. On it was written, WWJD. What would Jesus do? She instructed her son to look at the wristband before making decisions so that he might reflect Christ in his life. A week later, she was shocked to see their son became friends with prostitutes, was hanging out with sinners, was buying people who were already drunk yet another round of beers. Worse still, he had walked into the church the previous Sunday and tore down the bookstore. He had thrown the cash register through the window, chased the pastor out of the building, claiming that he was turning God's house into a den of thieves. Most shocking was what happened when his mother and her church friends went to picket a local abortion clinic. To her embarrassment, her son was also there, but he was with the women who had just had an abortion, yelling back at the protesters, "You who are without sin, cast the first stone." The mother was very distressed, but fortunately, she found a solution to this terrible problem. She made another wristband, and this time it said WWAPD. What would a Pharisee do? She burned the old wristband. Ever since, her son has been wearing the new wristband. He has become a dedicated tither, a public prayer warrior, an active condemner of sinners. He passionately defends the old covenant law and has a great reputation as a godly young man amongst religious people. Needless to say, the mother is very happy now. She only wishes that Jesus would take notice and follow her son's good example. Please do not misunderstand that I believe that Jesus condones drunkenness or abortion. But as a very politically active person, this called into question whether or not me being pro-life has led me to be quick to condemn, quick to judge, quick to remove grace, quick to withdraw mercy. Because Jesus would have been there. Jesus would have put his arm around those people, which brings me to my next disciple, Judas. Twice in this passage, in verse 2 and in verse 11, we see that Jesus knows that he is going to be betrayed. He knows this. He knows exactly what's going to happen. I've often imagined a different situation in which a much less noble, much less forgiving person is sitting at the head of the table. Imagine Tony Soprano at the head of this Last Supper. And he leans into Peter and to James and John, the sons of thunder, and he says, "That snitch is about to rat me out to the Pharisees. Why don't y'all go take care of him?" And yet that's not what he does. Jesus, in all forgiveness, in all compassion, kneels before his betrayer, kneels before the person who means to do him harm, and washes his feet. Folks, my second example tonight that I see from Jesus is that we are not only to love those who love us, but to love those who hate us. I'm reminded of the Sermon on the Mount. I'm reminded of when Jesus says to bless your enemies, to love those who persecute you, to pray for those who mean to do you wrong. Because too often we see people, sinners, outside of these walls as soldiers of Satan. And yet they are only prisoners of war. Prisoners of a war in which we were enslaved to before. And yet our weapons of this warfare are not hate. They are not fury. They are not maliciousness. They are love, compassion, kindness, prayer. The same forgiveness in which we have been forgiven. It is that same forgiveness that we must extend to others. It is that same compassion that we must extend to each other and everyone outside of these walls. Because it is the compassion that we have received and which we did not deserve that a world desperately needs, that a world desperately longs for. And so tonight I ask, I challenge myself to remove all hate, to remove all strife, to forgive those who have trespassed against me, to be forgiven, to ask for forgiveness, to infuse love and kindness into every word and every deed, not to be seen by men, but to be seen by Christ. Is it going to be difficult? Yes. Am I going to fail at times? Yes. And yet we are called to something greater. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. once said that darkness cannot destroy darkness. Only light can do that. That hate cannot destroy hate. Only love can do that. And so tonight, if you are in desperate need of love, if you are in desperate need of compassion, there is someone who is willing to give it to you. Tonight, if you need to renew your example as a servant, as someone who loves everyone, regardless of what they have done to you. Tonight, if you long for grace, if you long for mercy, I ask that you come as we stand and sing.
Everyone needs compassion, a love that's never failing.